Hello and welcome to the African Climate Change Conversation podcast. My name is Andrew Murray-Watson and I'm part of the communications team at British International Investment, the UK's development finance institution and impact investor. Today I have the great pleasure of speaking to Chipedi Moremong, the Chief Operating Officer at Africa 50. Africa 50 was established by the African Development Bank to help bridge Africa's infrastructure funding gap by facilitating project development, mobilising public and private sector finance and investing in infrastructure on the continent. I started by asking her about the importance of investment in climate adaptation and resilience, and whether it had been overlooked by financiers in the rush to reduce emissions.
So I think both very great questions and also very difficult questions to answer, in that I think as a continent and as financiers, the focus has really been on mitigation, right? The focus has been on new infrastructure, just given the infrastructure gap, both from a financing perspective and both from an availability perspective, right? So adaptation and I believe resilience have probably taken our second, what people would have thought our second order and third order things. Resilience though, I think given the extremes in climate that we're seeing, the various, you know, cyclones or hurricanes that have definitely impacted existing infrastructure is an area now of focus. I think the question in many of us, it's the how, right? Do we have the necessary tools? Do we understand what's required in order to ensure that our infrastructure is resilient, right? And what does that mean? Yeah. And when we think about resilience, there's a cost factor that's associated with resilience. So going forward, how does one then think about including that in many cases in projects that on the continent, people seem to see and feel that they are quite expensive? Right. So we're in a world now when I think one of the primary reasons why Africa 50 exists is being able to build up a bankable stock, a bankable pipeline of projects within the mitigation space that currently don't exist. Now you overlay that with, okay, we have some stock that needs to adapt. But the question that exists is, even from an adaptation, what are you adapting? Are you adapting infrastructure that can be adapted or not, right? Because the stock of some infrastructure that we have, it's so old, it's so outdated, that it's going to be the cost factor. The cost may outweigh the benefit versus putting in new infrastructure completely. Because in many instances, we don't have the infrastructure, right? So I think to me, it's about, and this is an oft-used word and maybe cliched and trite, is around the leapfrogging. And I think there's something actually to be said around leapfrogging and using technology to get Africa to where we are when it comes to mobile technology and fintech, right? And so I think too often we're so focused on traditional modes of delivering of infrastructure. How is it that we actually try and think around the technology piece in infrastructure, in the delivery of core infrastructure and bringing the two together? And I think when one thinks around the adaptation and specifically resilience, there's a huge role for technology to play. You know, we've just invested in a last mile internet service provider in East Africa called POA Internet, right? And what POA is looking to do, and this to me is sort of when you think about adaptable technology, what POA is looking to do, if you're looking to get internet to the home in a Kibera, you are not going to be able to do it by laying fiber, right? You just don't have the space, the rights of way to lay the fiber. So what can you use from a satellite perspective to get fiber to the home, right? And so this to me is sort of the new way of thinking to say, how one do you adapt to the environment, but how do you use technology to deliver that service, be it last mile access, be it ensuring that your infrastructure that you're developing is resilient, ensuring that you're using technology to monitor and measure the efficacy of the infrastructure that you've delivered. Talking about core infrastructure, we're talking about power plants, right? We're talking about transmission lines. We're talking about ports.
So when it comes to financing all of this, is the adaptation and resilience piece just a layer of, or does the finance, or does inward investors into Africa see that as a another layer of cost. When looking at adaptation and resilience from a financial perspective and a financial investor perspective, do investors see it as another layer of cost to be navigated, or are there opportunities inherent within adaptation and resilience that are attracting fresh capital? What is the sort of the mainstream investor attitude towards it?
To be honest with you, and I think if I think about it from the continent perspective, and maybe I'm speaking from a position of ignorance, I think some investors see it as an additional layer of cost and others see it as opportunity, right? I'd like to think of it as opportunity to do things differently, opportunities to look at new types of infrastructure, opportunities to be able to tap into pools of capital that we may not have been able to tap into previously, and hopefully to a certain degree, cheaper forms of capital, right? I think people, sort of blended finance is becoming something that is now becoming more prevalent, right? Or people are talking about it in order to be able to deliver climate resilient or adaptable tech infrastructure. So I'd like to see it, and I'd like for many of us as investors to see it as an opportunity, right? I think the whole, if one looks at the entire realm and landscape of climate change, we really need to see it as an opportunity. Opportunities to develop and create different types of jobs, right? The question is always going to be, as a continent, are we ready? Do we have the requisite depth of talent, or have we developed our talent in order to be ready to take advantage of the jobs that can develop and be created from this?
You mentioned the pools of capital. Are those pools of capital getting bigger? I mean, more accessible? Are you seeing a change in those providing that capital?
No, I think it's fair to say, especially on our continent, those pools of capital are very limited, right? And with the extremes that we're seeing in the weather, with the damage that we're seeing that's been already inflicted on the existing infrastructure, if anything, we need more of that capital. The question is, from where, right? I think too often we've turned to development finance institutions such as yourselves. We've turned to governments on a bilateral basis to tap into donor funding. I think the narrative needs to change. And from where I'm sitting as a financier in Africa, looking to tap into pools of capital, what are African institutional investors doing? What are African sovereign wealth funds doing to play a role, however small, in financing of climate resilient infrastructure? And I think to me, you know, those pools of capital may not be significant, but those pools of capital are critical. One, in signaling to the rest of the world, in signaling to commercial investors that there are good returns to be delivered by investing in infrastructure on the continent.
Yeah. Are you talking about sort of sovereign wealth guarantees as well as capital?
No. Trying very hard to move away from sovereign wealth guarantees, right? Okay. I think that was sort of the first phase of financing where sovereign guarantees were critical and necessary factors. I'd like to think many of our countries have moved beyond that. Mm. And there's already the track record to say from meeting obligations, the institutions or utilities that are off-takers can meet those obligations, right? Mm. I'm more talking about sovereign wealth funds that have been created, sort of future generation funds that have been created to invest in infrastructure. I'm talking about pension funds on the continent that currently do not invest in infrastructure.
You would have thought that African sovereign wealth funds and institution investors, this would be the first thing they'd look to invest in rather than the last.
You would hope so. And it's not everybody who does it, right? I can potentially count the sovereign wealth funds in one hand who do that. I think traditionally, a lot of them have invested in local debt, right? In government debt.
Yeah.
It's seen as safe. It's a form of literally just funding government as far as I'm concerned. So you're actually not creating additional new sources of revenue or additional productive assets. Few are changing. I think what I'm excited about is a few are seeing the need to invest in infrastructure. A few are seeing the benefits of long-dated assets and long-dated stable revenues that are provided by, and risk-adjusted revenues that are being provided by investing in infrastructure. but not enough of them are, right? You know, there's a figure of $2 trillion of assets under management, and a significant number of this is not going into, you know, infrastructure. It's not just to me the institutional investors at that level, right, at a sort of a primary source level, but it's also in the back end when it comes to the capital markets. The lack of depth in our capital markets to be able to provide financing to infrastructure, right? I think South Africa and possibly Egypt are well ahead of the curve and sort of pioneers when it comes to tapping capital markets for investing in infrastructure. We need to see more of that on the continent as a whole. And that wave is going to be driven by institutional investors. It has to be driven by them.
And if there was this change in mindset, how far can African institutional investors go to filling the funding deficit, and I guess to what extent, if they did commit this capital, what would be the kind of the mobilization benefit that would accrue from doing so?
I would hope it'll be even more significant, right? I think if I think about the sovereign wealth funds specifically, there's a de-risking aspect that they play, right? I think the issue from an African infrastructure investing has always been around the perceived risk, right? And it's around, in some cases, real risk. And therefore, there's a critical role that the sovereign wealth funds can play as public sector players in de-risking some of these assets, and in that way, catalyzing more capital, right? And I think they need to see themselves as playing that role directly in being able to catalyze more investment. You cannot expect to get an FDI if you, as a key player within the financial, you know, fabric of any economy, are not putting any capital at risk.
Okay. It's really interesting. It's a really fascinating subject, because I think it's, you know, so often the narrative is around 100 billion from the global north to the global south, and whether those promises are being kept, and whether if the capital is actually flowing and so on. When actually what you've been saying, it sounds like part of the solution that isn't talked about is African institutions doing it for themselves.
Yes. And so I guess the question for me is, and we were having this conversation earlier around a victim mentality and sort of saying, yes, Africa is the continent that's the least emitting, and therefore there's this moral obligation, so to speak, from the global north, right? That's all well and good. But Andrew, how long are we going to wait for, you know, the global north to fill that gap or meet those commitments of 100 billion, right? It's been going on for years and each year, and I don't think this COP is going to be any different. So while we're waiting, right, for something, an obligation or whatever you want to call it, that is not going to be fulfilled, a promise that's not going to be fulfilled, we are having more people going into poverty. We're having more people not getting access to electricity. We're having more people being displaced by extreme weather. We're having more livelihoods being displaced, being hurt or being destroyed by extremities in climate, right? So where is our obligation as local holders of capital? There's going to be a point when one needs to think about, one, the sustainability, right, of these sovereign wealth funds. Many of them are getting capital from commodities. Is it sustainable? How is it that you make sure that you are at the forefront of developing your own economy such that you've got productive assets that can ensure your sustainability, that can ensure your future?
Does that capital flow from African investors and sovereign wealth funds, does that go into nature-based solutions as well when we're talking about adaptation and resilience?
And when, please be clear to me when you talk about nature-based solutions.
So, for example, one that springs to mind is that we have an investment actually in Pakistan called Zephyr Power that is a wind power generator. It's restored mangrove swamps along the coastline where it's been based, which has dramatically reduced the repair bills that accrue from some wave damage and so on, and storms. And it's, you know, it's restored the local marine ecosystem and done lots of other things as well. So just one example, but I guess forests would be another, you know, nature-based solution in terms of sustainable forestry as another example.
So Andrew, I think you can't do one without the other, right?
Yeah.
I think the benefit though of our continent is we still even haven't exploited our current forests, right? So when you think about carbon trading, carbon markets, we've got the Congo Basin, which frankly, as a continent, or even from a Congo Basin perspective, be it Gabon, be it DRC, Republic of Congo, we're nowhere near exploiting the financial benefits of that being a carbon sink, right? So there's a long way that we can go. I think, you know, areas such as the Sahel, the question for me is always, how does one drive that in trying to reforest it? Africa, 58% of the continent still depends on agriculture, right? And we still, in many instances, don't feed ourselves. So we can't do one without the other. And I think one needs to see, there are a couple of things that are critical. And I think the Ukraine crisis has shown us this. It's around energy security and food security, right? So the two need to converge at some particular point in time.
Yeah. I mean, the Congo Basin is a really interesting example, because as Tony Turner asked about this before, talking about the value inherent in the biodiversity and the forests around the Congo Basin. But in the same breath, was talking about the massive fossil fuel reserves within the Congo Basin. And it's almost like we're in a race, because if Africa needs to take the pragmatic choice when it comes to gas or renewables or natural solutions or, you know, fossil fuel exploitation, isn't it a race to establish the financial benefits of natural environments before it's too late almost?
So I guess my view is we need to take a pragmatic approach, right? Mm-hmm. If at the end of the day, development is going to be central, I think it's going to be difficult from a continental perspective to say we're really completely moving away from fossil fuels. The question is going to be, how do we do that in a responsible manner? Let's look at cobalt and copper in the DRC, right? Nobody's talking about if that's been extracted in a responsible manner. Nobody's potentially talking about what the impact of that mining is having on their environment. But I think these are conversations that we need to have. But more importantly, it's around, how do we create the value chains instead of just being extractive? How do we create the value chains in the DRC? Or how do we create the value chains in sort of Central and East Africa to make sure that what we're doing is value additive and is creating proper ecosystems in that region, and that we're benefiting as a continent from a much bigger share of the pie?
Shabidi, thank you so much for your time and your insights today. It really has been a great conversation, and thank you to our listeners. Please do check out the other podcasts on the Africa Climate Change Conversation platform hosted on the British International Investment website, www.bii.co.uk.